to the Green Team of the Legendarium, the weird little spinoff podcast of the Legendarium, where patrons get together to discuss the books and topics the main crew haven't gotten around to yet. I'm Little Red Book, and tonight I have with me Kipton.
Heyo.
And Stormrunner.
Hey, how's it going?
And Spook.
Hello.
Tonight we will finish what I like to call Lariel Part 2, because it's basically the same book. So, to start off, how do you feel about this book in general and within the context of the series? Volunteers?
So, I did enjoy the book. I think it's a very solid conclusion to the trilogy, even if it comes at the expense of being another trilogy where book one is kind of its own separate thing that's loosely connected or directly connected. And books two and three are really one book split into two books. But it fulfills the plot and world-building promises set up in the first two books.
Cool, cool.
Yeah, I think book three really wanted to be at the end of book two, but would not fit in any binding method.
I mean, that's fair.
Or did the publisher just want to publish two books?
I have my mass market paperback of Lyriel, and it's thick. It's really big.
Fair.
Yeah, I think I'd go along with everything else, with everyone else, where it's a good conclusion. I wish Lyriel was about half as long, and then this book was put on kind of to the back of that book. But, you know, can't really change that. So, yeah.
So I'm assuming that everyone that is listening to us now has read Lyriel. Where would you divide the book to make it part of a portion instead?
You just get rid of Sam.
Yeah.
I love Sam.
I love Sam in Abhorson. Yes. I don't love Sam in Lyriel.
Think his character would have worked, though, if you didn't have Sam?
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think he would. Stormrunner, do you have any thoughts?
I think Sam's fine, but I more think you can, and this is a theme with me with a lot of books, is you can probably cut down on the number of travel sequences. So I don't know if there's a place that I would specifically say that I would cut the book so that you can fit Lyriel and Abhorson into one book, but there are probably some travel sequences that can be shortened. And well, a bigger thing for me with these both of these books would be the amount of time we spend in characters' heads thinking about the same things.
If I were to take these two books and reformulate them, I would actually cut it where Lyriel leaves the glacier and have the books divided that way instead of the way it's divided. But
I mean, that's basically saying remove Sam.
Yeah.
You could for that, though. There's parts with Sam.
No, there aren't. It's all Lyriel.
No, because there's the...
Right?
No.
There's definitely not much.
There's not much, but it is there. Because they have the cricket scene intermixed with Lyriel's journeys or whatnot. And they have... But I would definitely cut some of Sam, for sure. I would cut the bird of paradise or whatever he's supposed to be. Bird of spring. That part I would cut.
You could intermix some of those scenes with the glacier scene. Instead of... Oh, okay, then I'm just misremembering.
But then you don't get the vindictive sleet.
That's true. That was actually pretty funny. Just basically his sister being an all-around witch.
She's great. She's great.
She is so awful. I hate her.
Hey, she showed up on time.
Mm-hmm. He did.
Oh,
Yeah.
Stormrunner and Spook, would you guys consider reading more in this world?
Yeah. Okay. I would. He kind of drip feeds the world to us. So we're three books in, and we still don't really know a lot of what's going on. We know a lot about our main characters, but we don't really know a whole lot about the world itself or the people who exist in the world. It's a similar complaint I had with the first book. The places where we spend the most amount of time are cool. We get that build up of kind of like what this area is, like the glacier. Awesome. We get to know about the people who live there. We get to know about this library that exists and all that stuff. But every other place, we don't really spend more than like 5 minutes in, and then we go on to the next place. And then we go on to the next place. So I would read more just so that we can learn more about what's going on for everybody else in the world.
I would probably be inclined to not really read further into the series. I enjoyed what we got with the trilogy, but I wasn't super intrigued to learn more about the world or the characters. I agree with the comment about the world being spoon-fed, but and that works for a lot of what the story's doing, especially since it's more like the actual story, especially with books 2 and 3, is much more character focused. So that works, that there's not a ton of big world building sequences, but it also made me not super curious to continue. And like, this is a pretty definitive conclusion, at least for the main plot threads that were introduced in the first 3 books.
Okay, so Kipton, would you recommend people read on in the series as somebody who has?
I would ask about their general genre preferences, and I would ask if they're okay with middle grade fiction.
That's a little unfair.
No, but it's accurate.
No,
and it's not. I am someone who's okay with middle grade fiction, and I enjoyed it as that. I love Tamora Pierce. I would put a lot of her in middle grade.
I mean, I think that's fair. I don't think that... I would say that
for Golden Hand.
Yeah, that can be, it's a little sexy. It's a little sexy for middle grade. I would say it's definitely solidly YA, though. I don't know. I really enjoy it.
Not in prose style.
Okay. I mean, sure. You can argue about that part.
Okay.
I don't know. I like all the books I've read in this world, and there's a couple short stories too that we've mentioned, one before, and the other one is To Hold a Bridge, which is actually a horror story, almost, I would say, which I also enjoyed. I would recommend it. But
I read the short story that came immediately after this one. That was pretty fun.
Across
Nicholas Sarin, Across the Wall.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so any other non-spoilery things for this book?
Pretty solid conclusion. I quite enjoy it.
I do as well. I really like the end of this book.
Yeah, not really many loose ends, or at least plot threads introduced that were not resolved.
Yeah, it tied everything up. I think it tied it up a little too quickly, but everything was tied up pretty well.
4.5 stars.
Oh. I am the same, 4.5 stars.
About 4.
I'm probably a little lower.
That's okay.
That's
fine.
I would accept 4, but probably between 3.5 and 4.
We are allowed to disagree with each other. So now we're going full spoilers. Okay, Kipton, you have a summary for us.
I do. After a quick prologue where Sabriel and Touchstone get bombed by assassins in Corvir, we rejoin our protagonists as they stand besieged by Chlor in a Porson's house. We learn another mystery of the house, this time involving a sealed well that leads to the bottom of the Long Cliffs, and its lone inhabitant, Estarael. After a brief and nearly fatal encounter with that shade of divinity, we're back on the road to the Red Lake, though without Mogget. After making it to the lake, Lyriel and the dog go to rescue Nick while Sam secures their escape route. Unfortunately, the sliver within Nick wakes and dashes their rescue plans, and Sam and Lyriel are forced to leave him behind as they escape. Having seen the hemispheres being excavated, the dog finally tells Lyriel that the thing they're up against is the 9th Bright Shiner, the destroyer Oranus, and that they must stop Hedge's plan to free him at all costs. Unfortunately, he remains a step ahead of them, though by turning into a giant barking owl, Lyriel manages to make up some time and terrify some villagers. After meeting up with the Crossing Point army, Lyriel and Sam's pace rapidly improves, and they lead a truck convoy to the Lightning Farm where Hedge plans to release Oranus. Nicholas fights valiantly, yet mostly ineffectually, to foil the plans of the destroyer with the curious assistance of Mogget. Hordes of dead are made, used, and broken, and ultimately Oranus is reunited and freed, while Lyriel delves deep into death to learn how the 7 bound Oranus in the beginning, while Sam and the army protect her body and life. In the nick of time, Sabriel and company arrive to save Lyriel from the encroaching dead, and they immediately begin preparing to bind and break the destroyer anew. They fail to bind him with the seven bells, though with the assistance of a freed Mogget, now revealed as the eighth Brightshiner Yarael, he is sealed again within silver. Lyriel steals her will, and with a reforged Nahima combined with her pipes, cleaves the sphere in twain, opening herself to one last lethal strike, which the dog, now revealed as Kibeth, forestalls by biting off her sword hand and taking the blast herself. Luckily, she doesn't seem to be as dead as she fakes, and although she leaves Lyriel, she resurrects Nick as a parting gift.
I want to talk about the characters and their growth. How do you feel about L'Oreal's change?
I really like how she grows to fully accept her birthright and no longer seems like she doesn't bemoan her loss of the sight nearly as much, if at all. She is happy to be alive. She is happy to have the powers that she has. And she's happy to have saved the world and very sad that her dog died.
Yeah. I also really like her story. I like how she grew into this role that she had, the two roles that she had. And we see that continuous growth. And I like how at the end, when the dog dies, it like tells her, you have your family now. Like, you don't need me. You have your friends. You have your families. You'll be fine. As like she's crying about the loss of the dog, and it was great.
Yeah. Talking about tasks that needed divine help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They all needed several. There was a lot of divine help. But yeah.
Everybody showing up at the windmill on time at the same time.
It was a very anime Power of Friendship ending, and we'll get into that, I'm sure.
I noted how many times the dog saved Lyriel in death this time around, and it was like four or five times.
It was a lot.
But not the very last time when experiencing the pull of the ninth gate. That had to be done alone.
But I did in general, like, with, again, going back with her, sticking with her growth, seeing her level of confidence increase was very satisfying. And as the story progressed, pretty sure initially she's still fairly confident, at least relative to Sam at that point. I appreciated that part of her character, even as she was facing people like Hedge and such throughout the book.
I just really enjoyed that it was an incremental increase in confidence, and she has moments that she backslides a little bit here or there. And, you know, I mean, that's what it's really like. And I just thought it was really well portrayed. So let's talk about Kipton's favorite character, Sam. How do you feel about Sam's growth?
Hey, he made a named blade this time. So props to Sam. Major props to Sam. Out of flute metal and blood of royal lines and of porcelain lines and Claire, he brought back the original seven into a weapon and cleaved the ninth in half.
I just love that at the very end, he's like, do you need me to go into death with you? He's got his little pan pipes and they're not very powerful, but he's like, he's so changed. And again, it's incremental. And he also gets to a point where he can realize it's okay to be afraid. Like, this is actually really scary. It's normal to be afraid in this situation, but he still pushes through.
And it's complete full circle back to when he volunteered to go into death to find Hedge in the previous book.
Yeah, except more self-assured. And again, going back, I do appreciate, I have bemoaned the amount of internal dialogue and thoughts that we get with both Lyriel and Sam, but it does help with the true to life part that a lot, be like you were saying, that growth isn't not linear and that there are slide backs, and just because you are able to accomplish something once does not mean that you'll be able to replicate that exactly as you did before, or certainly that there won't be difficulty in doing so, and you won't have your own doubts that you can do it again. So I did in general like that about both of them.
He's less whiny.
Not whiny at all, I don't think, in this book.
Yeah, no.
Because now the plot's moving and they need to go do things.
No, I liked him a lot more in this book. He did a lot more things. He was a lot more confident. He had a lot more courage. And I mean, even in the last book, he did.
He was kind to Mogget.
Yeah.
Yes. I was just going to say, he seduced Mogget with sardines.
I did really like that part. It was like, why did you bring me this? He's like, because you wanted it. Because I said I would. That was a very sweet part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, did you get enough death?
What we got was excellent. Everything about death and the bells, they were my favorite parts of the whole series. I wish that in general we had gotten more, particularly in Lyriel, but also like a few more scenes in both Lyriel and Abhorson. I really like what we got. Lyriel's march through death at the end to all the different circles, gateways, was my favorite part of the series, particularly the final sequence with the lake and the stars. That was all, it's very unique world building and how it's presented. And I like that it was, at least with that section, that we progressed through each of the circles and didn't skip any steps, even though we've seen them previously. So that I really liked, but I do wish we had had a little bit more. And maybe that's, again, being a little bit nitpicky because Nyx was not, again, the story is supposed to be more, the story is more character driven. So maybe it's an unfair expectation that we would have gotten more of either the death or just the bells and the magic. But yeah, so maybe that's an unfair expectation. But what we do get is very cool.
I have a hot take about this.
Okay.
Fine. I love what we got of death in this book. I don't think that a sustained adventure or exploration can happen in the death that was portrayed in these books. They're too simple. Have no idea of like bounded spaces within them. And one of them, you just run across on a bridge.
And try not to get attacked by...
Try not to get attacked and definitely try not to get thrown off. Yeah. And I think that the amount that we got in this story is about max value for the complexity that we saw.
Yeah, I'd much rather see much more house than death.
Yeah, I want more glacier. Are you kidding me? I want so much more glacier.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know what other story or plot that would have been in the glacier without... I think it could have. The glacier could have felt like it dragged if there was significantly more...
I don't know. Just give me a whole different story in the glacier.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair point, because that would be... The part of the wood drag would be if it was a lot of Lyriel's internal stuff, but if this other story was not focused on that, then that would help.
Although living in the mind of a seer would be... Or of a Claire would be annoying. Like, it's good... that the Claire that we get in the mind of is only kind of a Claire. But if we had to deal with an entire book in the mind of a Claire.
She has to be a Claire to be a remembrancer.
Yeah, she has to be a Claire.
She's also half a Porson.
It's her Claire blood that lets her see at all.
Yeah.
So I would like to say, give us a story about the men in the glacier. Because there's men in the glacier. Give us a male Claire.
Yep, there are. They were mentioned. And I love that they were only mentioned.
Okay, so you don't want that story.
No, you can have that story. It's fine. But I love that they were only mentioned in this book, okay. series.
Okay.
We didn't see a single one.
Who knows what they're doing?
It's a great reversal. I love it.
I think some of that goes back to what I think Spook was saying, where the world, we don't get a ton of details about different parts of the world building, other than what the characters are directly interacting with, which is not a bad thing. It just, that's the choice he made.
So I guess going a little bit back to characters, but not quite, how do you feel about how Nyx handled the end of the situation in this book?
Nyx is so tragic. Yeah, oh my God. My heart goes out to Nyx every time I read the story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie. I cried when he died.
It's so sad. He's trying so hard, so hard. I mean, he has just like this little bit of a wind flute in his pocket that's making him feel like he can hold on to himself. And that his body is a pulped wreck, just covered in blood, and he's got nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
This poor boy.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Any other thoughts on that?
No, it was tragic. I think the initial idea of him being bound close to both life and death was very tragic, but also conceptually interesting, but sad with how he got there.
And he is very, very brave at the end, because he's still like, I'm going to shut down that switch. I'm going to stop the lightning.
Yep.
Oh, and there are some scenes with him that were very gripping, like this when I think it's Liriel trying to rescue him from the lake, and he's internally fighting with Oranis, and she's trying to somewhat bind him to the best that she can. That was a really good scene, and that was a really good Nick scene to see him, both to see Oranis's power and also see Nick's willpower in resisting that.
I also look forward, if I continue reading the series, I look forward to seeing more of him after. Because I know in the last book, a lot of him was doubting kind of what was going on in the Old Kingdom. So I talk about out of the frying pan into the fire with having to deal with some old god essentially in your body. So I'm curious how he is in later books, if he shows up at all.
Across the Wall is about him.
Does that take place after?
Yes.
Yes.
Sweet. Good deal.
Favorite moments in this series?
Sam forging a magic blade. Love it.
Just the glacier.
That's not a scene.
But I think Liriel finding the dog. So kind of like that whole series of scenes where she finds the dog and then she has to figure out how to deal with, I don't remember what it's called, the monster in the library. So just
The Stilkin.
So she's trying to figure out how to deal with it while also not being able to tell anyone that it's in there, because then she would get in a lot of trouble. And so I think that was one of my favorite parts of the series as a whole.
I agree. But that's a long section.
Yeah, that's not really a scene either.
It's one of the best parts of Liriel, though.
Oh, really? Hey, I mean, I talked about that on our first step.
Probably, in particular, the march through death in this book and the march through death in Sabriel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is going to get first abortion in the series.
I loved everything about the fight at the Ninth Gate.
Yeah, that was really good. It was very good. I want to say that one of my favorite scenes is when Nick is at the lake and he's convincing himself that he's hallucinating because he has a talking owl and a flying dog in his tent. And it's very funny in a dark sort of way. He's like, oh, yeah, so it's just normal to have, like, I have a fever. So of course I'm seeing a talking owl and a flying dog.
Poor Nick. Poor Nick.
I like how in the epilogue that evolves to him saying, instead of the owl and the dog, it was all one thing. So he asked the dog, like, didn't you have wings before? The dog just kind of went with it.
And the part where the dog bites off Lariel's hand is so just...
Yeah.
That whole scene is really powerful, but that moment...
Mm-hmm.
And then also the part where Maga is saving Nick. It's got to be one of my favorite parts of the book.
Yeah, I like that scene a lot.
Oh, there's also the section where she's flying as a giant owl with Nick over some people.
I love that one.
I wanted more of that.
Did you see that? Oh my God.
I've done that in D&D. It's great.
And it's the scene that is scariest to me is the lighthouse scene. And I thought that was really well done.
Very well done.
Yeah.
Just keep firing rockets.
Yep.
That example of a scene where the incestier technology is interacting with, where technology / weapons is interacting with the Old Kingdom stuff.
Yeah. So at the very end, do you buy Mogget's change of heart? Do you think it was realistic?
Yes, because it wasn't, or correct me if I'm wrong with this, but because it's more about, well, it makes sense that Mulgit would want to survive and not have Aranis consume everything or destroy everything.
Because he stood on the side of the binding. He stood the first time. So I think it's a big change for him. That's why I'm asking the question.
I definitely do. One of my favorite scenes is Mogget choose well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I am your rail and I stand against you. And the description of Urail's song and the things that it contains, the celebration of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that him being on the side of life is justified, even after his long imprisonment and binding. Mm-hmm. He's learned a few things.
Mm-hmm.
When making the charter the first time around, it was a very different world. They mm-hmm. didn't know what they were doing. They weren't sure anyways. It turns out that the thing they made, it's not all bad. Still got the whole undead problem going on, but life is good.
Yeah. And I like how when L'Oreal rings the final bell, Astrael, that something that would normally just throw you into death turns into this beautiful sorrow that is just part of life. I don't know if I'm explaining it quite correctly, but you know, like grief is part of life.
I loved the explanation that her tears are the cause of the river of death.
Mm.
Yes. So Astrael, I should say, she's definitely the one who cut the destroyer in half the first time, right?
It was all of them together.
Yeah, but I mean,
yes, it was definitely her. It was definitely her.
And I think that's kind of hinted at it being L'Oreal taking up
right
the Astrael bell. So yeah,
it would have been cool to to see more of all of the original seven.
Yeah,
I think you could definitely do more books on that.
Mm-hmm.
So Kibbeth is the disreputable dog. What do you guys think about that reveal?
Part of Kibbeth.
She's what's left over.
Yeah.
It makes sense with how much. With how often the distributed dog helped L'Oreal get out of death. Mm. It makes sense, like, in hindsight.
In the ways.
Yes. It all makes sense in hindsight that she is part of Kibbeth.
Yep. And there's some mentions of Sam, like, feeling familiar with Kibbeth when he touches it for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and she walks the archer as they're floating.
Yep, she walks off High Bridge, yeah.
Yeah.
And she walks them out of the cavern underneath the house.
I didn't catch those initially, but that's good. That's at least decent.
And her barks also walk people into death, walk undead into death.
Mm-hmm.
The dead hands, mostly.
Yeah.
Though maybe some shadow hands? I forget.
Well, and she walks Nick back into life, but we already knew she was Kibbeth by then.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And I like the reasoning. It's like, well, why can you do this? It's like, I'm disreputable. That's what I do.
I'm a liar.
Like, I do what I want.
It's like our second resurrection in this trilogy, though.
It really is.
Because we started with Sabriel's.
Yes. No, our third. Because Sabriel gets resurrected twice.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And then Sabriel.
Yeah.
No, fourth, if you count the rabbit at the very beginning of Sabriel.
All right.
I don't know if that counts. It kind of does. You have an
undead bunny. It does. It should. I mean, apparently schoolyard pranks are different.
it should count.
Sabriel knows it should count. And she's like, no, I can do one for a friend.
Well, she wasn't a friend. She was a little girl.
For a little girl.
Little six-year-old girl lost her bunny. That would be really sad. And the bunny spirit's just right there, right over the edge. Just back. Ink it back.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else we want to talk about before we get to the last question? Duff, got some thoughts.
Rereading it this time, watching the ways in which the dog intervened is one of my favorite things about rereading this series.
Mm.
With the knowledge of the dog being part of Kibbeth?
Yes.
Yeah.
It really changes it into like a divinity-assisted epic, which is a fun category in my mind.
Yeah.
That's in my taste.
I do wonder how much, if I will enjoy the series a lot more on a reread. Because I liked it, you know, the first time through, but I'm curious now, knowing the things I do, if I would be more patient with the series, maybe? I don't know if patience is the right word, but if I would just enjoy it more reading through now that I kind of know what's going to happen.
No, I get what you're saying. Like, that having different expectations going in might help to just have a different perspective.
Like, the dog will interfere in combat long before the dog will interfere in bravery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's also very good at stopping Lariel from pouting.
Yep.
Sounds like Sam needs the dog. Oh, I think Mogget doesn't help at all when pouting.
Now they only have Caragor. They got a downgrade. Not nearly as powerful either.
Yeah. No. No. And never mind. I can't say any of that.
What, that using a free magic spirit for your own ends generally doesn't end well?
No, not that. I have spoilers about Mogget, but I'm not going to share. Anyway. And so do you think the dog will show up again later in the series?
Probably the cameo, I would think, or something.
I think the fact that you're asking this means yes.
Well, it's what happens when she goes back into death? She stretches her legs out and runs along the border between life and death.
Yeah.
That's what she does.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
she's around.
She's around. She's hanging out, maybe.
No body, no crime, you know?
The dog can transfer fully physically into death and then back out again. So dog's fine.
Oh, I love her so much. Anyway, so Jeff asks us a question about which bright shiners went into which of the three bloodlines and which went into the wall. So the original poem says that there's only five that created the charter, but it's implied there's seven. I guess yep. Maybe Astiarol didn't go into anything because she dead.
And Kibbeth too, right? Or maybe that could be the assumption.
I don't know. I don't know what to do with her. So who went where? Into what things?
I don't think the series is particularly consistent about this in its clues.
I think Garth Nix was making it up as he went along, to be honest.
I agree with that. I fully agree with that.
Like, there was probably some sort of general plan, but the specifics of that, I think, were not hammered out from the beginning, or even by the end of book one.
So, I think it's safe to say that the Thinker went into the wall?
I think that's probably safe to say as well. I think it's also safe to say that Astarael gave up her living presence in order to exist only in death.
Yeah.
And the binder is definitely probably Abhorson's.
And that's what I would think.
Yeah.
It's not what I would think that the original version of the poem would say, but
No, probably not. I don't know. I just think Garth was like, hey, this is a cool concept. And then he got halfway through Lyriel was like, well, maybe I want to do this instead.
I wonder, it's fine.
It doesn't matter to me.
For the one about seeing all in frozen water, I assume the Claire. So,
yes.
Yes. Two, right? Two is the one that the Claire took.
Yes.
For the binding of Aranis, but four sees all in frozen water is definitely the rhyme of the first.
Yes.
So that's why I think it's inconsistent. Yeah, that's the clearest example.
Because the twins take up the Waker, Marcial. And that doesn't seem like something, I mean, I guess, I don't know. It doesn't seem to fit. I could be wrong. I don't know.
They're not all, the bells of the Binding and Breaking are not all about the royal lines, right? Because didn't Touchstone take Rana because he was a sleeper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't seem super consistent to me either.
Because he also had a connection to the stones.
Yeah.
I don't know.
because only the kings, the royal lineage, can rebuild charter stones.
Yeah.
I don't know. None of it makes sense.
I think that's because he, in that sense, a lot of the world building elements were there to as vehicles for him to tell the story he wanted to, which like works well, but it means that he was not terribly concerned about that when he was writing it.
Yeah. And I think I've actually seen an interview with him. He's not an outliner. He lets the world flow.
I think I can tell.
Yes, and that's fine. It's a really great story. I love it.
Is that consistent with his other series? Keys to the Kingdom?
I've read some short stories of his, and then I've read the Mr. Monday series.
Yeah, Keys.
But I read it once, and it was fine. It was fine. And so I don't really, I've read this enough to say for sure, but I would say probably, I would say it's consistent with Mr. Monday.
Sure.
That series. Because I just remembered the end of the series, and I'm like,
That's just how he writes, you know?
Yes.
Because a lot of what I enjoy reading is the world takes first place in terms of what they're making. So it's interesting reading another series where it's the characters who take first place and going, I wish I knew more about this. Oh, well.
You do get more house, especially in the one that's a prequel to Sabriel, which is about her father.
Sweet.
That wouldn't sound that's intriguing.
That's the only one I haven't read.
It's actually, I think you would probably like it more than the other ones.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed it. It feels much more adult than the other ones, I think.
Great. Great.
And you get to meet Sabriel's mom. Hmm.
I always ask for more Wyverly College, right?
There is a whole section of Wyverly College in this book.
Yeah.
And you get a lot more kind of inter-family politics in the story. Hmm. And you also meet several characters that are in L'Oreal and Sabriel are make an appearance in that story.
We finally meet Sonar and Rael's parents?
No. No, we don't meet them. Oh. We do meet a ranger, a Claire ranger.
Who are the Claire rangers again?
They're the ones who patrol the glacier and fight off all the
polar bears.
The polar bears.
Yep.
Do we get to meet any of the Claire male wives in that series?
No.
Male wives. Male wives.
No.
Dang.
We don't. So I'm saying I want a story. If we're going to do a glacier story, it needs to be a male Claire story.
Maybe a male Claire librarian.
Just so Kip can picture himself in that character.
No, the library is clearly the most interesting place in the glacier.
Yeah.
I would also accept if a far future Old Kingdom where they have squadrons of paper wings.
I think we talked about this before. So maybe a story about one of the Southerners. And they're building a farm in the Old Kingdom now. What happens to them?
Yeah, because we don't really see a ton of the Old Kingdom other than the capital.
Correct.
And the glacier, but...
Yeah, so we have all these refugees that Sam promised are going to...
This is not the author I would pin an economic book on.
Yeah, that's the...
It doesn't have to be economic. It could just be culture shock. How do we...
Yeah, we didn't really... The whole... refugee plot political plot line, I would have liked to have more of that in general, but that wasn't wasn't what he was writing, because that plot's mostly there to get Sabriel and Touchstone out of the picture for the book. Which works well in that function, but
and it also gives Hedge a bunch of dead bodies to play with too. They're kind of a casualty. They have the opposite of plot armor.
it's the red shirt.
Here are a bunch of characters, and I'm just gonna kill them. That's their only reason they're here.
God, the poor army men. The four army men of Ancelstier and the Marines.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, they never stood a chance.
Or Debus.
So, we discussed in the first book whether you could sail to from the Old Kingdom to Ancelstier, which I'm never going to say it right. So
Ancelstier.
Whatever.
And the answer was right, no. Kevin. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because otherwise they would have just sailed the barges down the shore.
Yep.
Instead of...
Mm-hmm.
You are totally right. And the book I was thinking of that I thought maybe hinted that you could, it was from another place in the Old Kingdom.
Yeah.
Down the shore. So you're right. Mm-hmm. I'm wrong. I hope you feel happy.
Look, I'm very invested in the dimensional mechanics of the binding of Ancelstier to the Old Kingdom. It's interesting to me.
It's kind of like one world crash landed into another world.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good
how I picture
metaphor.
It. I view it as like being stitched in with the wall.
Yeah. Because the wall messes everything up on both sides.
Because they say that it was before when they were referring to the original binding and breaking of Uranus, and they say that he found a way, a loophole. He can escape in a world where he was never broken because he was bound and broken before they infringed upon another world with the wall.
Right. Something like that. It was, again, I don't think this is something that Nyx really thought about a lot.
Yeah.
I love it, though.
I think it's great. You know what? I love me a good Portal fantasy. And this is like one big giant Portal world.
Yep.
Yes.
When is Sam going to make the perimeter guard some good swords?
Right?
Next book?
Next book.
Maybe.
Next book is all in hand.
It's all about him making swords.
Well, the next book is technically, it's called Golden Hand. It's about him making a hand. I mean, it's not about that. But
it's not about that.
It's not about that at all, but it happens.
He's a very kind guy.
Is Liriel's Skywalkerness completed?
I was looking to how to insert that.
No, it totally is.
She's the last remembrancer.
No.
I'm not gonna bite that bait.
Any other final thoughts before we go?
I'm glad we did the series. It had been on my TBR for a while. It was good to finally get into it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun world building, some cool character stuff.
Yeah. It was fun to hear Tim Curry do it this time.
Yeah. Yes. Fantastic.
For sure. Okay. I'm also really glad to sit down and talk about this book because I've read it so many, or this series because I've read it so many times. And it's just fun to share it with all of you. And I hope you consider reading it. Thank you so much for joining us. Please consider supporting The Legendarium on Patreon. Our music is Galactic Damages by Jingle Pounds. Thanks, Craig, for loaning us a little corner of your media empire and for Horizon Brave for starting it all. For Kipton, Spook, and Stormrunner, I'm Little Red Book. Night, y'all.
Night.
Good night.
All right.